whispered Frodo, coming behind. "Don't alarm him. He's much more dangerous than he looks." The black crawling shape was now three-quarters of the way down, and perhaps 50 feet or less above the cliff's foot. Crouching stone still in the shadow of a large boulder, the hobbits watched him. He seemed to have come to a difficult passage, or to be troubled about something. They could hear him snuffling, and now and again there was a harsh hiss of breath that sounded like a curse. He lifted his head, and they thought they heard him spit. Then he moved on again. Now they could hear his voice creaking and whistling.
"Cautious, my precious. More haste, less speed. We mustn't risk our neck, must we, precious? And oh, precious."
He lifted his head again, blinked at the moon, and quickly shut his eyes.
"We hate it," he hissed. "Nasty, shivery light it is. It spies on us, precious. It hurts our eyes."
He was getting lower now, and the hisses became sharper and clearer.
"Where is it? Where is it, my precious? My precious? It's ours, it is, and we wants it. The thieves, the thieves, the filthy little thieves. Where are they with my precious? Curse them, we hates them."
"It doesn't sound as if he knew we were here, does it?" whispered Sam. "And what's his precious? Does he mean the shh?" breathed Frodo. "He's getting near now, near enough to hear a whisper." Indeed, Gollum had suddenly paused again, and his large head on its scrawny neck was lolling from side to side as if he was listening. His pale eyes were half unlidded. Sam restrained himself, though his fingers were twitching. His eyes, filled with anger and disgust, were fixed on the wretched creature, as he now began to move again, still whispering and hissing to himself. At last he was no more than a dozen feet from the ground, right above their heads. From that point there was a sheer drop, for the cliff was slightly undercut, and even Gollum could not find a hold of any kind. He seemed to be trying to twist round, so as to go legs first, when suddenly, with a shrill, whistling shriek, he fell. As he did so, he curled his legs and arms up round him, like a spider whose descending thread is snapped. Sam was out of his hiding in a flash, and crossed the space between him and the cliff foot in a couple of leaps. Before Gollum could get up, he was on top of him. But he found Gollum more than he bargained for, even taken like that, suddenly, off his guard after a fall. Before Sam could get a hold, long legs and arms were wound round him, pinning his arms, and a clinging grip, soft but horribly strong, was squeezing him like slowly tightening cords. Clammy fingers were feeling for his throat. Then sharp teeth bit into his shoulder. All he could do was to butt his hard head sideways into the creature's face. Gollum hissed and spat, but he didn't let go. Things would have gone ill with Sam if he'd been alone. But Frodo sprang up and drew Sting from its sheath. With his left hand he drew back Gollum's head by his thin, lank hair, stretching his long neck and forcing his pale, venomous eyes to stare up at the sky. "Let go, Gollum," he said. "This is Sting. You've seen it before, once upon a time. Let go, or you'll feel it this time. I'll cut your throat." Gollum collapsed and went as loose as wet string. Sam got up, fingering his shoulder. His eyes smouldered with anger, but he could not avenge himself. His miserable enemy lay grovelling on the stones, whimpering.
"Don't hurt us. Don't let them hurt us, precious. They won't hurt us, will they? Nice little hobbitses. We didn't mean them no harm, but they jumps on us like cats on poor mices, they did, precious. And we're so lonely. We'll be nice to them, very nice, if they'll be nice to us, won't we? Yes, yes."
"Well, what's to be done with it?" said Sam, tie it up, so as it can't come sneaking after us no more, I say.
But that would kill us,
whimpered Gollum.
Cruel little hobbits, says, tie us up in the cold, hard lands and leave us, Gollum, Gollum.
Sobs welled up in his gobbling throat. No, said Frodo, if we kill him, we must kill him outright. But we can't do that, not as things are. Poor wretch. He's done us no harm. Oh, hasn't he? Said Sam, rubbing his shoulder. Anyway, he meant to. And he means to, I'll warrant. Throttle us in our sleep, that's his plan.
I dare say, said Frodo. But what he means to do is another matter. He paused for a while in thought. Gollum lay still, but stopped whimpering. Sam stood glowering over him. It seemed to Frodo then that he heard, quite plainly but far off, voices out of the past. What a pity Bilbo did not stab the vile creature when he had a chance.
Pity? It was pity that stayed his hand. Pity and mercy, not to strike without need.
I don't feel any pity for Gollum. He deserves death.
Deserves death? I dare say he does. Many that live deserve death, and some die that deserve life. Can you give that to them? Then be not too eager to deal out death in the name of justice, fearing for your own safety. Even the wise cannot see all ends.
Very well, he answered aloud, lowering the sword. But still I'm afraid. And yet, as you see, I won't touch the creature, for now that I see him, I do pity him. Sam stared at his master, who seemed to be speaking to someone who was not there. Gollum lifted his head.
Yes, wretched we are, precious, he whined. Misery, misery. Hobbits won't kill us. Nice hobbits.
No, we won't, said Frodo. But we won't let you go either. You're full of wickedness and mischief, Gollum. You'll have to come with us, that's all, while we keep an eye on you. But you must help us, if you can. One good turn deserves another.
Yes, yes, indeed, said Gollum, sitting up. Nice hobbits! Will you come with them? Find them safe paths in the dark. Yes, we will. And where are they going in these cold, hard lands, we wonders? Yes, we wonders.
He looked up at them, and a faint light of cunning and eagerness flickered for a second in his pale, blinking eyes. Sam scowled at him and sucked his teeth. But he seemed to sense that there was something odd about his master's mood, and that the matter was beyond argument. All the same, he was amazed at Frodo's reply. Frodo looked straight into Gollum's eyes, which flinched and twisted away. "You know that, or you guess well enough, Smeagol," he said, quietly and sternly. "We are going to Mordor, of course, and you know the way there, I believe."
"Hush!"
said Gollum, covering his ears with his hands, as if such frankness, and the open speaking of the names, hurt him.
"We guessed, yes, we guessed," he whispered, "and we didn't want them to go, did we? No, precious, not the nice hobbits. Ashes, ashes, and dust, and thirst there is, and pits, 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 and orcs, thousands of orcs. Says, nice hobbits mustn't go to those places."
"So you have been there," Frodo insisted, "and you're being drawn back there, aren't you?"
"Yes, yes, no," shrieked Gollum. "Once by accident it was, wasn't it, precious? Yes, by accident. But we won't go back, no, no."
Then suddenly his voice and language changed, and he sobbed in his throat, and spoke, but not to them.
"Leave me alone, Gollum. You hurt me. Oh, my poor hands, Gollum. I don't want to come back. I can't find it. I'm tired. We can't find it. Gollum, Gollum, no, nowhere. They're always awake. Dwarves, men, and elves. Terrible elves with bright eyes. I can't find it. Ugh!"
He got up and clenched his long hand into a bony, fleshless knot, shaking it towards the east.
"We won't," he cried. "Not for you."
Then he collapsed again.
"Gollum, Gollum," he whimpered with his face to the ground. "Don't look at us. Go away. Go to sleep."
"He won't go away or go to sleep at your command, Smeagol," said Frodo. "But if you really wish to be free of him again, then you must help me. And that, I fear, means finding us a path towards him. But you needn't go all the way, not beyond the gates of his land." Gollum sat up again and looked at him under his eyelids.
"He's over there," he cackled. "Always there. Orcs will take you all the way. Easy to find orcs east of the river. Don't ask Smeagol. Poor, poor Smeagol. He went away long ago. They took his precious, and he's lost now."
"Perhaps we'll find him again, if you come with us," said Frodo.
"No, no, never. He's lost his precious," said Gollum.
"Get up," said Frodo. Gollum stood up and backed away against the cliff. "Now," said Frodo, "can you find a path easier by day or by night? We're tired, but if you choose the night, we'll start tonight."
"The big lights hurt our eyes, they do," Gollum whined. "Not under the white face, not yet. It will go behind the hills soon, yes. Rest a bit first, nice hobbits."
"Then sit down," said Frodo, "and don't move." The hobbits seated themselves beside him, one on either side, with their backs to the stony wall, resting their legs. There was no need for any arrangement by word. They knew that they mustn't sleep for a moment. Slowly the moon went by. Shadows fell down from the hills, and all grew dark before them. The stars grew thick and bright in the sky above. No one stirred. Gollum sat with his legs drawn up, knees under chin, flat hands and feet splayed on the ground. His eyes closed, but he seemed tense, as if thinking or listening. Frodo looked across at Sam. Their eyes met and they understood. They relaxed, leaning their heads back and shutting their eyes or seeming to. Soon the sound of their soft breathing could be heard. Gollum's hands twitched a little. Hardly perceptibly his head moved to the left and the right, and first one eye and then the other opened a slit. The hobbits made no sign. Suddenly, with startling agility and speed, straight off the ground with a jump like a grasshopper or a frog, Gollum bounded forward into the darkness. But that was just what Frodo and Sam had expected. Sam was on him before he had gone 2 paces after his spring. Frodo, coming behind, grabbed his legs and threw him. "Your rope might be useful again, Sam," he said. Sam got out the rope. "And where were you off to in the cold, hard lands, Mr. Gollum?" he growled. "We wonders, aye, we wonders. To find some of your orc friends, I warrant, you nasty, treacherous creature. It's round your neck this rope ought to go, and a tight noose, too." Gollum lay quiet and tried no further tricks. He didn't answer Sam, but gave him a swift, venomous look. "All we need is something to keep a hold on him," said Frodo. "We want him to walk, so it's no good tying his legs or his arms. He seems to use them nearly as much. Tie one end to his ankle and keep a grip on the other end." He stood over Gollum while Sam tied the knot. The result surprised them both. Gollum began to scream, a thin, tearing sound, very horrible to hear. He writhed, and tried to get his mouth to his ankle and bite the rope. He kept on screaming. At last Frodo was convinced that he really was in pain. But it couldn't be from the knot. He examined it, and found that it wasn't too tight, indeed hardly tight enough. Sam was gentler than his words. "What's the matter with you?" he said. "If you'll try to run away, you must be tied. But we don't wish to hurt you."
"It hurts us, it hurts us," hissed Gollum. "It freezes, it bites, Elves twisted it. Curse them. Nasty, cruel hobbits. That's why we tries to escape. Of course it is, precious. We guessed they were cruel hobbits. They visit elves. Fierce elves with bright eyes. Take it off us. It hurts us.
No, I won't take it off you, said Frodo. Not unless... He paused a moment in thought. Not unless there is any promise you can make that I can trust.
We will swear to do what he wants, yes, yes, said Gollum, still twisting and grabbing at his ankle. It hurts us.
Swear, said Frodo.
Smeagol,
said Gollum suddenly and clearly, opening his eyes wide and staring at Frodo with a strange light.
Smeagol will swear on the precious.
Frodo drew himself up. And again Sam was startled by his words and his stern voice.
"On the precious? How dare you?" he said. "Think. One ring to rule them all and in the darkness bind them.
Would you commit your promise to that, Smeagol? It will hold you, but it's more treacherous than you are. It may twist your words. Beware." Gollum cowered.
"On the precious, on the precious," he repeated.
"And what would you swear?" asked Frodo.
"To be very, very good," said Gollum.
Then, crawling to Frodo's feet, he grovelled before him, whispering hoarsely. A shudder ran over him, as if the words shook his very bones with fear.
"Smeagol will swear never, never to let him have it. Never Smeagol will save it. But he must swear on the precious."
"No, not on it," said Frodo,
looking down at him with stern pity. "All you wish is to see it and touch it, if you can, though you know it would drive you mad. Not on it. Swear by it, if you will, for you know where it is. Yes, you know, Smeagol. It's before you." For a moment it appeared to Sam that his master had grown and Gollum had shrunk. A tall, stern shadow, a mighty lord who hid his brightness in grey cloud, and at his feet a little whining dog. Yet the two were in some way akin and not alien. They could reach one another's minds. Gollum raised himself and began pawing at Frodo, fawning at his knees.
"Down, down," said Frodo. "Now speak your promise."
"We promises. Yes, I promise," said Gollum. "I will serve the master of the precious. Good master. Good Smeagol, Gollum, Gollum."
Suddenly he began to weep and bite at his ankle again.
"Take the rope off, Sam," said Frodo.
Reluctantly Sam obeyed. At once Gollum got up and began prancing about like a whipped cur whose master has patted it. From that moment a change, which lasted for some time, came over him. He spoke with less hissing and whining, and he spoke to his companions direct, not to his precious self. He would cringe and flinch if they stepped near him or made any sudden movement, and he avoided the touch of their elven cloaks. But he was friendly, and indeed pitifully anxious to please. He would cackle with laughter and caper if any jest was made, or even if Frodo spoke kindly to him, and weep if Frodo rebuked him. Sam said little to him of any sort. He suspected him more deeply than ever, and if possible liked the new Gollum, the Smeagol, less than the old.
"Well, Gollum, or whatever it is we're to call you," he said. "Now for it. The moon's gone, and the night's going. We'd better start."
"Yes, yes," agreed Gollum, skipping about. "Off we go. There's only one way across between the north end and the south end. I found it, I did. Orcs don't use it. Orcs don't know it. Orcs don't cross the marshes. They go round for miles and miles. Very lucky you came this way. Very lucky you found Smeagol. Yes, follow Smeagol."
He took a few steps away and looked back inquiringly, like a dog inviting them for a walk.
"Wait a bit, Gollum," cried Sam. "Not too far ahead now. I'm going to beat your tail, and I've got the rope handy."
"No, no," said Gollum. "Smeagol promised."
In the deep of night, under hard, clear stars, they set off. Gollum led them back northward for a while, along the way that they had come. Then he slanted to the right, away from the steep edge of the Emyn Muil, down the broken stony slopes towards the vast fens below. They faded swiftly and softly into the darkness. Over all the leagues of waste before the gates of Mordor, there was a black silence. Chapter 2. The Passage of the Marshes. Gollum moved quickly, with his head and neck thrust forward, often using his hands as well as his feet. Frodo and Sam were hard put to it to keep up with him. But he seemed no longer to have any thought of escaping, and if they fell behind, he would turn and wait for them. After a time he brought them to the brink of the narrow gully that they had struck before. But they were now further down the hills.
"Here it is," he cried. "There is a way down in sight, yes. Now we follows it out. Out away over there."
He pointed south and east towards the marshes. The reek of them came to their nostrils, heavy and foul, even in the cool night air. Gollum cast up and down along the brink, and at length he called to them.
"Here! We can get down here. Smeagol went this way once. I went this way, hiding from orcs."
He led the way, and following him the hobbits climbed down into the gloom. It was not difficult, for the rift was at this point only some 15 feet deep and about a dozen across. There was running water at the bottom. It was, in fact, the bed of one of the many small rivers that trickled down from the hills to feed the stagnant pools and mires beyond. Gollum turned to the right, southward more or less, and splashed along with his feet in the shallow, stony stream. He seemed greatly delighted to feel the water, and chuckled to himself, sometimes even croaking in a sort of song.
"The cold, hard lands, they bite our hands, they gnaws our feet. The rocks and stones are like old bones, all bare of meat. But stream and pool is wet and cool, so nice for feet. And now we wish..." "Ha ha! What does we wish?"
he said, looking sidelong at the hobbits.
"We'll tell you," he croaked. "He guessed it long ago. Baggins guessed it."
A glint came into his eyes, and Sam, catching the gleam in the darkness, thought it far from pleasant.
"Alive without breath, as cold as death, never thirsty, ever drinking, clad in mail, never clinking, drowns on dry land, thinks an island is a mountain, thinks a fountain is a puff of air. So sleek, so fair, what a joy to meet. We only wish to catch a fish so juicy sweet."
These words only made more pressing to Sam's mind a problem that had been troubling him from the moment when he understood that his master was going to adopt Gollum as a guide, the problem of food. It didn't occur to him that his master might also have thought of it, but he supposed Gollum had. Indeed, how had Gollum kept himself in all his lonely wandering? "Not too well," thought Sam. "He looks fair famished. Not too dainty to try what hobbit tastes like, if there ain't no fish, I'll wager, supposing as he could catch us napping. Well, he won't. Not Sam Gamgee, for one." They stumbled along in the dark, winding gully for a long time, or so it seemed to the tired feet of Frodo and Sam. The gully turned eastward, and as they went on it broadened and got gradually shallower. At last the sky above grew faint with the first grey of morning. Gollum had shown no signs of tiring, but now he looked up and halted.
"Day is near,"
he whispered, as if day was something that might overhear him and spring on him.
"Smeagol will stay here. I will stay here, and the yellow face won't see me.
We should be glad to see the sun, said Frodo. But we'll stay here. We're too tired to go on any further at present.
You're not wise to be glad of the yellow face, said Gollum. It shows you up. Nice, sensible hobbits, stay with Smeagol. Orcs and nasty things are about. They can see a long way. Stay and hide with me.
The three of them settled down to rest at the foot of the rocky wall of the gully. It was not much more than a tall man's height now, and at its base there were wide, flat shelves of dry stone. The water ran in a channel on the other side. Frodo and Sam sat on one of the flats, resting their backs. Gollum paddled and scrabbled in the stream.
"We must take a little food," said Frodo. "Are you hungry, Smeagol? We have very little to share, but we will spare you what we can."
At the word hungry, a greenish light was kindled in Gollum's pale eyes, and they seemed to protrude further than ever from his thin, sickly face. For a moment he relapsed into his old Gollum manner.
"We are famished. Yes, famished we are, precious," he said. "What is it they eat? Have they nice fishes?"
His tongue lolled out between his sharp yellow teeth, licking his colourless lips. "No, we've got no fish," said Frodo. "We have only got this." He held up a wafer of lembas. "And water, if the water here is fit to drink."
"Yes, yes, nice water," said Gollum. Drink it while we can. But what is it they've got, precious? Is it crunchable? Is it tasty?"
Frodo broke off a portion of a wafer and handed it to him on its leaf wrapping. Gollum sniffed at the leaf and his face changed. A spasm of disgust came over it, and a hint of his old malice.
"Smeagol smells it," he said. "Leaves out of the elf country. Gah, they stinks. He climbed in those trees, and he couldn't wash the smell off his hands, my nice hands."
Dropping the leaf, he took a corner of the lembas and nibbled it. He spat, and a fit of coughing shook him.
"Ah, no," he spluttered. "You tried to choke poor Smeagol. Dust the lashes. He can't eat that. He must starve. But Smeagol doesn't mind. Nice hobbits. Smeagol has promised he will starve. He can't eat hobbits' food. He will starve. Poor thin Smeagol."
"I'm sorry," said Frodo, "but I can't help you, I'm afraid. I think this food would do you good, if you would try, but perhaps you can't even try, not yet anyway."
The hobbits munched their lembas in silence. Sam thought it had tasted far better, somehow, than it had for a good while. Gollum's behaviour had made him attend to its flavour again. But he didn't feel comfortable. Gollum watched every morsel from hand to mouth, like an expectant dog by a diner's chair. Only when they'd finished and were preparing to rest was he apparently convinced that they had no hidden dainties that he could share in. Then he went and sat by himself a few paces away and whimpered a little.
"Look here," Sam whispered to Frodo, not too softly. He didn't really care whether Gollum heard him or not. "We've got to get some sleep, but not both together with that hungry villain nigh, promise or no promise. Smeagol or Gollum, he won't change his habits in a hurry, I'll warrant. You go to sleep, Mr. Frodo, and I'll call you when I can't keep my eyelids propped up. Turnin' about, same as before, while he's loose."
"Perhaps you're right, Sam," said Frodo, speaking openly. "There is a change in him, but just what kind of change and how deep, I'm not sure yet. Seriously, though, I don't think there's any need for fear, at present. Still, watch if you wish. Give me about 2 hours, not more, and then call me." So tired was Frodo that his head fell forward on his breast, and he slept almost as soon as he'd spoken the words. Gollum seemed no longer to have any fears. He curled up and went quickly to sleep, quite unconcerned. Presently his breath was hissing softly through his clenched teeth, but he lay still as stone. After a while, fearing that he'd drop off himself,
if he sat listening to his two companions breathing, Sam got up and gently prodded Gollum. His hands uncurled and twitched, but he made no other movement. Sam bent down and said, "Fish," close to his ear, but there was no response, not even a catch in Gollum's breathing. Sam scratched his head.
"Must really be asleep," he muttered. "And if I was like Gollum, he wouldn't wake up never again."
He restrained the thoughts of his sword and the rope that sprang to his mind, and went and sat down by his master. When he woke up, the sky above was dim, not lighter, but darker than when they had breakfasted. Sam leapt to his feet. Not least from his own feeling of vigour and hunger, he suddenly understood that he'd slept the daylight away, 9 hours at least. Frodo was still fast asleep, lying now stretched on his side. Gollum wasn't to be seen. Various reproachful names for himself came to Sam's mind, drawn from the gaffer's large paternal word hoard. Then it also occurred to him that his master had been right. There had for the present been nothing to guard against. They were, at any rate, both alive and unthrottled. "Poor wretch," he said half remorselessly. "Now I wonder where he's got to."
"Not far, not far," said a voice above him.
He looked up and saw the shape of Gollum's large head and ears against the evening sky.
"Here, what are you doing?"
cried Sam, his suspicions coming back as soon as he saw the shape.
"Smeagol is hungry," said Gollum. "Be back soon."
"Come back now," shouted Sam. "Hi, come back." But Gollum had vanished. Frodo woke at the sound of Sam's shout and sat up, rubbing his eyes. "Hello," he said. "Anything wrong? What's the time?"
"I dunno," said Sam. "After sundown, I reckon, and he's gone off. Says he's hungry."
"Don't worry," said Frodo. "There's no help for it. But he'll come back, you'll see. The promise will hold yet a while, and he won't leave his precious anyway." Frodo made light of it when he learned that they had slept soundly for hours with Gollum, and a very hungry Gollum, too, loose beside them. "Don't think of any of your gaffer's hard names," he said. "You were worn out, and it's turned out well. We are now both rested, and we've a hard road ahead, the worst road of all."
"About the food," said Sam. "How long's it going to take us to do this job? And when it's done, what are we going to do then? This whey bread keeps you on your legs in a wonderful way, though it doesn't satisfy the innards proper, as you might say. Not to my feeling, anyhow, meaning no disrespect to them as made it. But you have to eat some of it every day, and it doesn't grow. I reckon we've got enough to last, say, 3 weeks or so, and that with a tight belt and a light tooth, mind you. We've been a bit free with it so far. I don't know how long we shall take to finish," said Frodo. "We were miserably delayed in the hills. But Samwise Gamgee, my dear hobbit, indeed, Sam, my dearest hobbit, friend of friends, I don't think we need give thought to what comes after that. To do the job, as you put it, what hope is there that we ever shall? And if we do, who knows what will come of that? If the one goes into the fire and we're at hand, I ask you, Sam, are we ever likely to need bread again? I think not. If we can nurse our limbs to bring us to Mount Doom, that's all we can do. More than I can, I begin to feel." Sam nodded silently. He took his master's hand and bent over it. He didn't kiss it, though his tears fell on it. Then he turned away, drew his sleeve over his nose, and got up and stamped about, trying to whistle, and saying between the efforts, "Where's that dratted creature?" It was actually not long before Gollum returned, but he came so quietly that they didn't hear him till he stood before them. His fingers and face were soiled with black mud. He was still chewing and slavering. What he was chewing, they didn't ask or like to think. "Worms or beetles or something slimy out of holes," thought Sam. "Brr, the nasty creature, the poor wretch." Gollum said nothing to them, until he'd drunk deeply and washed himself in the stream. Then he came up to them, licking his lips.
better now, he said. Are we rested? Ready to go on? Nice hobbits, they sleep beautifully. Trust Smeagol now? Very, very good.
The next stage of their journey was much the same as the last. As they went on, the gully became even shallower and the slope of its floor more gradual. Its bottom was less stony and more earthy, and slowly its sides dwindled to mere banks. It began to wind and wander. That night drew to its end, but clouds were now over moon and star, and they knew of the coming of day only by the slow spreading of the thin grey light. In a chill hour they came to the end of the watercourse. The banks became moss-grown mounds. Over the last shelf of rotting stone, the stream gurgled and fell down into a brown bog and was lost. Dry reeds hissed and rattled, though they could feel no wind. On either side and in front, wide fens and mires now lay, stretching away southward and eastward into the dim half-light. Mists curled and smoked from dark and noisome pools. The reek of them hung stifling in the still air. Far away, now almost due south, the mountain walls of Mordor loomed like a black bar of rugged clouds floating above a dangerous fog-bound sea. The hobbits were now wholly in the hands of Gollum. They didn't know, and couldn't guess in that misty light, that they were in fact only just within the northern borders of the marshes, the main expanse of which lay south of them. They could, if they'd known the lands, with some delay have retraced their steps a little, and then turning east have come round over hard roads to the bare plain of Dagorlad, the field of the ancient battle before the gates of Mordor. Not that there was great hope in such a course. On that stony plain there was no cover, and across it ran the highways of the orcs and the soldiers of the enemy. Not even the cloaks of Lórien would have concealed them there. "How do we shape our course now, Smeagol?" asked Frodo. "Must we cross these evil-smelling fens?"
"No need, no need at all," said Gollum. "Not if hobbits want to reach the Dark Mountains and go to see him very quick. Back a little and round a little." His skinny arm waved north and east. "And you can come on hard, cold roads to the very gates of his country. Lots of his people will be there looking out for guests. Very pleased to take them straight to him, oh yes. His eye watches that way all the time. It caught Smeagol there long ago." Gollum shuddered. "But Smeagol has used his eyes since then, yes, yes. I've used eyes and feet and nose since then. I know other ways. More difficult, not so quick, but better. If we don't want him to see, follow Smeagol. He can take you through the marshes, through the mists, nice thick mists. Follow Smeagol very carefully, and you may go a long way. Quite a long way before he catches you, yes, perhaps."
It was already day, a windless and sullen morning, and the marsh reeks lay in heavy banks. No sun pierced the low, clouded sky, and Gollum seemed anxious to continue the journey at once. So after a brief rest, they set out again and were soon lost in a shadowy, silent world, cut off from all view of the lands about, either the hills that they had left or the mountains that they sought. They went slowly in single file, Gollum, Sam, Frodo. Frodo seemed the most weary of the three, and slow though they went, he often lagged. The hobbits soon found that what had looked like one vast fen was really an endless network of pools and soft mires and winding, half-strangled watercourses. Among these a cunning eye and foot could thread a wandering path. Gollum certainly had that cunning and needed all of it. His head on its long neck was ever turning this way and that, while he sniffed and muttered all the time to himself. Sometimes he would hold up his hand and halt them, while he went forward a little, crouching,
testing the ground with fingers or toes, or merely listening with one ear pressed to the earth. It was dreary and wearisome. Cold, clammy winter still held sway in this forsaken country. The only green was the scum of livid weed on the dark, greasy surfaces of the sullen waters. Dead grasses and rotting weeds loomed up in the mists like ragged shadows of long-forgotten summers. As the day wore on, the light increased a little, and the mists lifted, growing thinner and more transparent. Far above the rot and vapours of the world, the sun was riding high and golden now in a serene country with floors of dazzling foam. But only a passing ghost of her could they see below, bleared, pale, giving no colour and no warmth. But even at this faint reminder of her presence, Gollum scowled and flinched. He halted their journey, and they rested, squatting like little hunted animals, in the borders of a great brown reed thicket. There was a deep silence, only scraped on its surface by the faint quiver of empty seed plumes and broken grass blades trembling in small air movements that they could not feel. "Not a bird," said Sam mournfully.
"No, no birds," said Gollum. "Nice birds."
He licked his lips.
"No birds here. There are snakes, says, worms, says, things in the pools. Lots of things, lots of nasty things. No birds,"
he ended sadly. Sam looked at him with distaste. So passed the third day of their journey with Gollum. Before the shadows of evening were long in happier lands, they went on again, always on and on with only brief halts. These they made not so much for rest as to help Gollum, for now even he had to go forward with great care, and he was sometimes at a loss for a while. They'd come to the very midst of the dead marshes, and it was dark. They walked slowly, stooping, keeping close in line, following attentively every move that Gollum made. The fens grew more wet, opening into wide, stagnant meres, amongst which it grew more and more difficult to find the firmer places where feet could tread without sinking into gurgling mud. The travellers were light, or maybe none of them would ever have found a way through. Presently it grew altogether dark. The air itself seemed black and heavy to breathe. When lights appeared, Sam rubbed his eyes. He thought his head was going queer. He first saw one with a corner of his left eye, a wisp of pale sheen that faded away. But others appeared soon after, some like dimly shining smoke, some like misty flames flickering slowly above unseen candles. Here and there they twisted like ghostly sheets unfurled by hidden hands. But neither of his companions spoke a word. At last Sam could bear it no longer. "What's all this, Gollum?" he said in a whisper. "These lights! They're all round us now. Are we trapped? Who are they?" Gollum looked up. A dark water was before him, and he was crawling on the ground, this way and that, doubtful of the way.
"Yes, they are all round us," he whispered. "The tricksy lights. Candles of corpses. Yes, yes. Don't you heed them. Don't look. Don't follow them. Where's the master?"
Sam looked back and found that Frodo had lagged again. He couldn't see him. He went some paces back into the darkness, not daring to move far, or to call in more than a hoarse whisper. Suddenly he stumbled against Frodo, who was standing lost in thought, looking at the pale lights. His hands hung stiff at his sides. Water and slime were dripping from them. "Come, Mr. Frodo," said Sam. "Don't look at them. Gollum says we mustn't. Let's keep up with him and get out of this cursed place as quick as we can, if we can." "All right," said Frodo, as if returning out of a dream. "I'm coming. Go on." Hurrying forward again, Sam tripped, catching his foot in some old root or tussock. He fell and came heavily on his hands, which sank deep into sticky ooze, so that his face was brought close to the surface of the dark mere. There was a faint hiss, A noisome smell went up. The lights flickered and danced and swirled. For a moment the water below him looked like some window, glazed with grimy glass, through which he was peering. Wrenching his hands out of the bog, he sprang back with a cry.
"There are dead things! Dead faces in the water!" he said with horror. "Dead faces!"
Colum laughed.
"The dead marshes, yes, yes, that is their names," he cackled. "You shouldn't look in when the candles are lit."
"Who are they? What are they?"
asked Sam, shuddering, turning to Frodo, who was now behind him.
"I don't know," said Frodo in a dreamlike voice, "but I've seen them too, in the pools when the candles were lit. They lie in all the pools, pale faces, deep, deep under the dark water. I saw them, grim faces and evil, and noble faces and sad, many faces proud and fair, and weeds in their silver hair, but all foul, all rotting, all dead. A fell light is in them." Frodo hid his eyes in his hands. "I know not who they are, but I thought I saw their men and elves and orcs beside them."
"Yes, yes," said Gollum. "All dead, all rotten. Elves and men and orcs, the dead marshes. There was a great battle long ago. Yes, so they told him when Smeagol was young, when I was young before the precious came. It was a great battle. Tall men with long swords and terrible elves and orcs shrieking. They fought on the plain for days and months at the black gates. But the marshes have grown since then, swallowing up the graves, always creeping, creeping."
"But that's an age and more ago," said Sam. "The dead can't be really there. Is it some devilry hatched in the dark land?"
"Who knows? Smeagol doesn't know," answered Gollum. "You cannot reach them. You cannot touch them. We tried once, yes, precious, I tried once, but you cannot reach them. Only shapes to see, perhaps, not to touch. No, precious, all dead."
Sam looked darkly at him and shuddered again, thinking that he guessed why Smeagol had tried to touch them. "Well, I don't want to see them," he said. "Never again. Can't we get on and get away?"
"Oh, yes," said Gollum, "but slowly, very slowly, very carefully. Or hobbits go down to join the dead ones and light little candles. Follow, Smeagol, don't look at lights."
He crawled away to the right, seeking for a path round the mirror. They came close behind, stooping, often using their hands even as he did. "Three precious little golems in a row we shall be if this goes on much longer," thought Sam. At last they came to the end of the black mere, and they crossed it perilously, crawling or hopping from one treacherous island tussock to another. Often they floundered, stepping or falling hands first into waters as noisome as a cesspool, till they were slimed and fouled almost up to their necks and stank in one another's nostrils. It was late in the night when at length they reached firmer ground again. Gollum hissed and whispered to himself, but it appeared that he was pleased. In some mysterious way, by some blended sense of feel and smell and uncanny memory for shapes in the dark, he seemed to know just where he was again, and to be sure of his road again.
"Now on we go," he said. "Nice hobbits, brave hobbits. Very, very weary, of course. So we are, my precious, all of us. But we must take master away from the wicked lights. Yes, yes, we must."
With these words he started off again, almost at a trot, down what appeared to be a long lane between high reeds, and they stumbled after him as quickly as they could. But in a little while he stopped suddenly and sniffed the air doubtfully, hissing as if he was troubled or displeased again.
"What is it?" growled Sam, misinterpreting the signs. "What's the need to sniff? The stink nearly knocks me down with my nose held.
You stink, and Master stinks, the whole place stinks.
Yes, yes, and Sam stinks, answered Gollum. Poor Smeagol smells it, but good Smeagol bears it. Helps nice Master, but that's no matter. The air's moving, change is coming. Smeagol wonders. He's not happy.
He went on again, but his uneasiness grew, and every now and again he stood up to his full height, craning his neck eastward and southward. For some time the hobbits could not hear or feel what was troubling him. Then suddenly all three halted, stiffening and listening. To Frodo and Sam it seemed that they heard, far away, a long wailing cry, high and thin and cruel. They shivered. At the same moment the stirring of the air became perceptible to them, and it grew very cold. As they stood straining their ears, they heard a noise like a wind coming in the distance. The misty lights wavered, dimmed, and went out. Gollum wouldn't move. He stood shaking and gibbering to himself, until with a rush the wind came upon them, hissing and snarling over the marshes. The night became less dark, light enough for them to see, or half-see, shapeless drifts of fog, curling and twisting as it rolled over them and past them. Looking up, they saw the clouds breaking and shredding, and then high in the south the moon glimmered out, riding in the flying rack. For a moment the sight of it gladdened the hearts of the hobbits, but Gollum cowered down, muttering curses on the white face. Then Frodo and Sam, staring at the sky, breathing deeply of the fresher air, saw it come. A small cloud flying from the accursed hills, a black shadow loosed from Mordor, a vast shape winged and ominous. It scudded across the moon, and with a deadly cry went away westward, outrunning the wind in its fell speed. They fell forward, grovelling heedlessly on the cold earth. But the shadow of horror wheeled and returned, passing lower now, right above them, sweeping the Fenric with its ghastly wings. And then it was gone, flying back to Mordor with the speed of the wrath of Sauron, and behind it the wind roared away, leaving the dead marshes bare and bleak. The naked waste, as far as the eye could pierce, even to the distant menace of the mountains, was dappled with the fitful moonlight. Frodo and Sam got up, rubbing their eyes, like children wakened from an evil dream to find the familiar night still over the world. But Gollum lay on the ground as if he'd been stunned. They roused him with difficulty, and for some time he wouldn't lift his face, but knelt forward on his elbows, covering the back of his head with his large, flat hands.
"Wraiths!" he wailed. "Wraiths on wings! The precious is their master. They see everything, everything. Nothing can hide from them. Curse the white face! And they tell him everything. He sees, he knows. Ah, Gollum, Gollum, Gollum."
It was not until the moon had sunk, westering far beyond Tol Brandir, that he would get up or make a move. From that time on, Sam thought that he sensed a change in Gollum again. He was more fawning and would be friendly. But Sam surprised some strange looks in his eyes at times, especially towards Frodo, and he went back more and more into his old manner of speaking. And Sam had another growing anxiety. Frodo seemed to be weary, weary to the point of exhaustion. He said nothing. Indeed, he hardly spoke at all, and he didn't complain, but he walked like one who carries a load, the weight of which is ever-increasing, and he dragged along, slower and slower, so that Sam had often to beg Gollum to wait and not to leave their master behind. In fact, with every step towards the gates of Mordor, Frodo felt the ring on its chain about his neck grow more burdensome. He was now beginning to feel it as an actual weight dragging him earthwards. But far more he was troubled by the eye, so he called it to himself. It was that, more than the drag of the ring, that made him cower and stoop as he walked. The eye. that horrible growing sense of a hostile will that strove with great power to pierce all shadows of cloud and earth and flesh, and to see you, to pin you under its deadly gaze, naked, immovable. So thin, so frail and thin, the veils were become that still warded it off. Frodo knew just where the present habitation and heart of that will now was, as certainly as a man can tell the direction of the sun with his eyes shut. He was facing it, and its potency beat upon his brow.
Gollum probably felt something of the same sort. But what went on in his wretched heart, between the pressure of the eye, and the lust of the ring that was so near, and his grovelling promise made half in the fear of cold iron, the hobbits didn't guess. Frodo gave no thought to it. Sam's mind was occupied mostly with his master, hardly noticing the dark cloud that had fallen on his own heart. He put Frodo in front of him now, and kept a watchful eye on every movement of his, supporting him if he stumbled, and trying to encourage him with clumsy words. When day came at last, the hobbits were surprised to see how much closer the ominous mountains had already drawn. The air was now clearer and colder, and though still far off, the walls of Mordor were no longer a cloudy menace on the edge of sight, but as grim black towers they frowned across a dismal waste. The marshes were at an end, dying away into dead peats and wide flats of dry, cracked mud. The land ahead rose in long, shallow slopes, barren and pitiless, towards the desert that lay at Sauron's gate. While the grey light lasted, they cowered under a black stone like worms, shrinking, lest the winged terror should pass and spy them with its cruel eyes. The remainder of that journey was a shadow of growing fear, in which memory could find nothing to rest upon. The two more nights they struggled on through the weary, pathless land. The air, as it seemed to them, grew harsh, and filled with a bitter reek that caught their breath and parched their mouths. At last, on the fifth morning since they took the road with Gollum, they halted once more. Before them, dark in the dawn, the great mountains reached up to roofs of smoke and cloud. Out from their feet were flung huge buttresses and broken hills that were now at the nearest scarce a dozen miles away. Frodo looked round him in horror. Dreadful as the dead marshes had been, and the arid moors of the no-man lands, more loathsome far was the country that the crawling day now slowly unveiled to his shrinking eyes. Even to the mere of dead faces some haggard phantom of green spring would come, but here neither spring nor summer would ever come again. Here nothing lived. Not even the leprous growths that feed on rottenness. The gasping pools were choked with ash and crawling muds, sickly white and grey, as if the mountains had vomited the filth of their entrails upon the lands about. High mounds of crushed and powdered rock, great cones of earth, fire-blasted and poison-stained, stood like an obscene graveyard in endless rows, slowly revealed in the reluctant light. They had come to the desolation that lay before Mordor, the lasting monument to the dark labour of its slaves that should endure when all their purposes were made void. A land defiled, diseased beyond all healing, unless the great sea should enter in and wash it with oblivion. "I feel sick," said Sam. Frodo didn't speak. For a while they stood there, like men on the edge of a sleep where nightmare lurks, holding it off, though they know that they can only come to morning through the shadows. The light broadened and hardened, the gasping pits and poisonous mounds grew hideously clear. The sun was up, walking among clouds and long flags of smoke, but even the sunlight was defiled. The hobbits had no welcome for that light. Unfriendly, it seemed, revealing them in their helplessness. Little squeaking ghosts that wandered among the ash heaps of the Dark Lord. Too weary to go further, they sought for some place where they could rest. For a while they sat without speaking under the shadow of a mound of slag,
but foul fumes leaked out of it, catching their throats and choking them. Gollum was the first to get up. Spluttering and cursing he rose, and without a word or a glance at the hobbits he crawled away on all fours. Frodo and Sam crawled after him, until they came to a wide, almost circular pit, high-banked upon the west. It was cold and dead, and a foul sump of oily, many-coloured ooze lay at its bottom. In this evil hole they cowered, hoping in its shadow to escape the attention of the Eye.